Welcome to the Self-Publishing School Podcast. This is the podcast to listen to if you're an aspiring writer or an author who wants to be more successful. On this show, you'll learn how to write and launch a book successfully, all from the top authors and people just like you who are doing it at the highest level. I'm your host, Chandler Volt, the founder of Self-Publishing School, the author of the book called Published, and the CEO of selfpublishing.com. For free training on how to publish a book that sells 10,000 copies, go to selfpublishing.com/free training. Hey, Chandler Bolt here, and joining me today is the extremely talented Elaine Ersey. She's one of our coaches at Self Publishing School. She's the author of two books. If you're watching this on the YouTube channel, you can see both of them in the background, in her awesome background. And so one is adult nonfiction, and one is a children's book. And she's also coached tons of our students at Self Publishing School, completed hundreds of coaching calls. So you're in for a treat here. Elaine's awesome. We're going to be talking about today in this interview, how to turn your nonfiction book into a children's book. So a lot of people ask about this. Maybe you heard Ruth Sukup talk a little bit about this on her podcast episode. We just scratched the surface there. So we're going to go in depth. Elaine is one of our children's book coaches. So she's got, and she just turned her nonfiction book into a children's book. So she's got a lot of wisdom to share here. So you're in for a treat. I'm super excited. Elaine, welcome. Great to have you.
Thanks, Chandler. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah. So let's dive in. So first and foremost, two-part question. Why did you write your first book? And then why did you decide to turn that book into a children's book?
Great question. I think my whole life, people have said, Elaine, you're going to write a book someday. You're going to do something big. I remember being like 5 and having the dentist say, you're going to do big things one day. And I'm like, how do you already know that? But also I knew that he was right. I just didn't know how it was going to play out for a really long time. And when I got the opportunity to work for Self-Publishing School, it was just a very obvious choice. And at your advice of write what's easiest first, Don't Be Weird was birthed. Don't Be Weird is stories from my 5 years in college ministry with fraternity and sorority students, and some just from my personal life as well of sharing the gospel. And that is Don't Be Weird. I'm Not Weird was birthed out of Don't Be Weird when I realized there is nothing on the market that I can find that's not gatekept by really expensive church curriculums to help kids understand the gospel. So taking some of the simple adult language from Don't Be Weird and making it more kid-friendly, as simple as that, I'm Not Weird was born in about 15 minutes.
Wow. And so tell us that story, born in 15 minutes. What did that process look like, and how did you make the transition?
Yeah, I was at work one morning and looking at the children's book course thinking, I can totally do this. This is the way that I speak. I'm well known in my friend group for making things understandable that are not typically understood. So I just thought, man, I can totally do this. So I went through part of the children's book course. I paused it and said, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm just going to write the rough draft and see what happens. And it just flowed out of me, I think, inspired by God, I hope. And yeah, 15 minutes later, I had the draft written. I read it out loud and I said, this sounds like a kid's book. I need more.
So talk to me about that process for those who aren't familiar. So how many words was the draft, and how did you even, because I feel like that can be intimidating. It's like, holy cow, I got this whole book that I now have to kind of condense down into a short and abbreviated version. Like, how did you do that? How did the draft come about? And then also as part of that, and maybe you didn't think about this till later, but how did you approach like what age group to write for with kind of transitioning to a kid's book?
Yeah. So I love this question. It's one of the things that we talk about with authors almost every day. And it's because when we are taking a 25,000 word or often more words book into a children's book, and we tell you 750 words is the max, people freak. I was able to avoid this, I think, because partially it's a little bit of a gift to just shoot straight and be very concise. But for me, what made the biggest difference is a tool that we've actually made available in the course now of not just a book dummy, but a book dummy that defines it assigns every page a job. So right from the get, I knew that my book was going to be 32 pages. That was the most common size, and I wanted my book to be the most common children's book size. So I gave every page a job, and I knew that there were some pages that I didn't get to be creative with. So I knew that I needed a prep for parents page. I knew that I needed a copyright page. I knew that I needed a lead magnet and an activity page. So I knew that I only had about 28 pages to be creative with. So on those 28 pages, I went wild. However, I went wild for a kid, which means that I wanted them to be able to learn how to read from my books, not just be read my books. And for me, that meant making an approachable length for a 2 to 6 year old that was just starting to learn how to identify letters and words.
And how do you think, before that, why that age group?
Yeah, so for me, again, the foundational faith piece is huge to me. Approachable faith is kind of the tagline, and the brand around my books is, how can we have approachable faith? I think approachable faith has to be built a foundation from as soon as we can understand words. So when I was thinking about what age group do I want to write for, I wanted the absolute foundation, which, again, as soon as we can understand words, 2 to 6.
Now, so you've been through the process, and you've published a children's book, you've published a nonfiction book. What are the biggest differences? And so for someone who's thinking about going on this journey, either, you know, they're just starting with a children's book, or they're going to do kind of the transition, just like you did, and do nonfiction first and children's book second. What are the biggest differences in the process?
Good question. I was talking to somebody about this today on a coaching call, and just explaining that I think I would not have done either if my heart was not in both. And it was really important for me not to force the process either time. So as I started work with self-publishing school, I didn't immediately start writing a book. I didn't wait for inspiration. I sought out inspiration. And it was the same thing when I was looking at the children's book course. If I hadn't been inspired at that point to write, I would have waited and sought out both inspiration for the children's book. So for me, that inspiration was huge. And they would have both been much more difficult processes had I not sought out inspiration. That being said, there were practical things. I had to put wheels on it so that it would actually go somewhere. And wheels on it for me was getting into the course and saying, okay, what can I do? And how can I do this really practically? The harder part for me was the facing my failures that had to come as a part of publishing my adult nonfiction. I don't just write about the beautiful, fun times where people say yes, and this is so much fun, and I love talking to you about the Lord. I write about the times where I totally fell on my face and screwed up. Children's books didn't choose to address that yet. So we'll see how that goes later in the series. But for now, I didn't have to address that in the children's book.
And you talked about, you know, not just waiting for inspiration to strike, but a combo of waiting and also seeking it out. What does that look like? And what would be your tips for someone who's listening to this, watching this, who's kind of in that same place thinking, okay, hold up. I'm kind of in that spot where I'm like, I don't know if I'm totally inspired. Do I just wait around and meditate and hope that it's going to happen? what does that look like to actually seek it out? And how did you know when it's like, all right, cool, it's time, let's do this?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So I personally really believe that where your treasure is, your heart lies. Also, the words that you speak most are what you believe most and believe most deeply. For me, that is the gospel. That plays out in a lot of different ways. So that allows me avenues to talk about how I steward my money, how I address hard things when they happen, how I share things with my friends, the way that I actually live out what that looks like. So I would say, look at some of those same things. Look at, what do you talk about the most often? What are you most passionate about? What do your friends refer to you as the expert of? Those are the things that I really believe you could probably write a book about.
Yeah, that's great. And you get through, let's talk specific to the children's book process. You'd already done one book, and now you're going to the children's book kind of writing, publishing, production, marketing, all that stuff. What was the toughest part for you that was specific to the children's book side of things?
Oh man. So there is an immense amount of waiting involved in the children's book process, specifically with illustrations. And it is just, it makes me grind my teeth thinking about what it is to wait for your illustrator to get things done. However, it's the best feeling on the flip side. It feels like Christmas every time you get a finalized illustration in your inbox. Yeah. So
yeah,
best worst sort of thing.
For sure. And it's funny. My girlfriend Aubrey, as you know, is going through the children's book course. And so it's been really fun for me to be on the other side of that, to see that. It's just like, oh my gosh, look at these mock-ups I just got. And then the second wave of like, okay, hey, what do you think? Do you think change this or this? But then like that feeling, like you said, of the finalized illustration. I like the way you said that. It's like getting that finalized illustration is like, okay, another one. It's like I'm X out of 32 pages through, and then obviously getting to the cover and kind of having that. And it's just like, it just feels like it keeps stacking and the excitement's building kind of throughout the process. What were big takeaways for you from a children's book specific where you're like, oh, you know, looking back on this was new or this was different? Obviously you touched on the illustration piece, you touched on the 750 words, 32 pages, the book dummy, like anything else that you said, oh, this was a takeaway or learning, or this was something specific that it, you know, the Elaine of 9 months ago, 12 months ago, hey, look out for that. You're going to want to learn that piece.
Yeah, so a couple things that stand out to me. One is that the editing process is drastically different than with a nonfiction, at least in my experience. So there weren't a lot of content editing or developmental editing, synonymous there, with my first book. It had a story that flowed rather well, and not a lot of things had to be moved around or changed drastically. With the children's book, I had a rude awakening. So although, as I mentioned, I'm gifted in shooting straight and being concise, turns out while that's helpful for children's books, it's also a little abrasive. So I had some reality checks from my editor saying, this actually doesn't work. And some of my best editors were my editor that I paid for sure was epic, but some of my best editors were reading it out loud to kids and they were brutal, but super helpful. And I would ask, you know, what age would you have read this book? And that actually changed the focus for me. So editing process overarchingly a little different.
That's interesting. How did that come about, the reading out loud to kids? How did that come about? How was that helpful? And then you alluded to that piece of how did that shift the age group that you're writing for?
Yeah. So like I said, my language, super concise, but a little abrasive. A 12-year-old pointed that out to me. So I read this out loud to a 12-year-old and his first response was, this sounds like it's for a 7-year-old and you're kind of mean. Whoa. Okay. Good, good. Thank you for being honest. And it's one of those moments as an author where you're like, okay, thank you seriously for telling me. And thank goodness I asked a kid, because only a kid can be that honest. But it also helped me realize, like I said, oh, this is for a younger audience. He's totally right. So I need to make sure my illustrations speak to a younger audience. I need to make sure that when I do my marketing, it's towards a younger audience. So the editing process, talking to a kid was awesome and super different. Also fulfillment has been really different. So that is a totally another piece that I don't even know if you want to get into, but.
How has the fulfillment been different?
So there is a reality to printing children's books on Amazon that they are beautiful, high color, awesome. Also that they're paperback and they're what's called saddle stitched. So this is the book that I want you to see, right? This is the hardcover, beautiful. I'm so proud of him. Like, he's great. This is what gets printed on Amazon. So also beautiful, super proud, really great. And it's got the gray line because it's a proof. Your proofs come like that, but it's saddle stitched. And I was not super hype about that.
Yeah.
I wanted the ability to have a hardcover. That was important to me. And I also wanted a paperback that was perfect bound. So actually had the stuff on the spine. You can't do that through Amazon. So I had to get a little creative and ask some questions about how can I do fulfillment on this in a way that honors what my readers spend. So I got pretty creative when it came to fulfillment.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because I think that's something a lot of people go through. And I mean, I know even on the nonfiction side of things, way back with my first book, the realization of, oh, wow, color printing is so much more and just pretty much unrealistic. And so I'm going to have to do grayscale. And that was like, oh, man, it was a tough pill to swallow, but also would have been nice to know a lot earlier. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I realized that way close to the to when I was about to publish the book. Talk to me through kind of knowing what you know now, like how are you advising your authors through the Children's Book Program? Like, what are you learning? And so there's a lot of different ways, right? Do you go color? Do you go no color? Do you go Amazon? No Amazon. And no, on the other side of the business, it's we love KDP print and printing through Amazon and all those things, because it's amazing, but it's not as amazing for children's books specifically. So can you kind of walk us through a lot of that?
Sure. So I would say that it's all a matter of opinion. And I think you just have to own that as an author, that it's okay to have your own opinion, and it's okay to call out your coach, or it's okay to call out some article that you read online. Like, hey, I actually don't think you're right. I don't mind that it's perfect bound, and that's cool for me. I also want to acknowledge that I'm hugely privileged in this. I'm single. I don't have kids, which means I have an abundance of time. I can do whatever I want with all the time that I have. And I choose to spend a lot of that on a hobby, which is writing children's books. It's also a passion, so I don't want to discount it, but I choose to spend my time on that. That being said, my opinion is that I really cared about the quality of the book. And I cared that when a parent spent money, they would be proud of the thing that they got in their hand. And in my opinion, that meant that it was perfect bound with a title on the spine, and that there was a hard bound option that was at an affordable price. So the way that I went about making that happen was realizing that it wasn't going to happen on KDP. I could offer my book through KDP and it would be beautiful, but it wouldn't have that perfect bound spine, which is really important to me. I learned that I could do that through Ingram Spark, which is another print-on-demand printing company, and that they would sell my book on Amazon for me. The profit margin on that was about half of what it would be through KDP alone. So that was something I was taking into account. So I went a step further and did some research on where else can I get this printed. And I was able to find what's called a novelty press. So just another printing place. And I was able to get perfect bound soft cover books and hardcover books printed for much less than what I could get anywhere else. And I chose to do fulfillment on my own. So I've got a box of books in my basement of both. And I do fulfillment on my own through my own website, which, again, huge privilege. I know not everybody has the time, but for me, it made the most sense since I was willing to do the fulfillment side on my own.
Hey, Chandler Bolt here. I hope you're loving this episode so far. It's time to go from inspiration to implementation. All right, so if you've learned something, we want to help you implement what you've learned with your book. So what I want you to do right now is go to selfpublishing.com/schedule, book a publishing consultation with one of the experts on my team. We'll talk about your goals for your book, your dreams, your challenges, your next steps, and we'll start putting together a plan. All right, so go to selfpublishing.com/schedule, book a call with the team. Let's see how we can help with your book. It's time to implement. I see. So let's talk through some of these, because I think some people say, hey, Amazon, that's good. Yes. Let's do it that way. Some people, a lot of other people will say, hey, I want a hard copy and I'm okay with a lower margin. So let's go Ingram Spark. Totally. And that will be printed for me, fulfilled for me. And then there's the novelty press option and fulfilling it yourself. Like any advice for people kind of navigating that decision, like what's good for which people? And then I guess also, did you explore at all the option of printing through a novelty press and then fulfilling by Amazon? What's the difference in margin there? I know we're getting way into the weeds, but I think this is something that if someone is publishing a children's book, I mean, you probably get a bajillion questions about these type of things on book production group coaching calls, on individual coaching calls. And so I just want to make sure that we go real in depth for anyone who's going through this process.
Yeah, I love these questions so much that I am building templates and tools to put into our course, so that if anybody wants this, you can just see, here's the margin and this is what it actually looks like. So those are a part of the CBS course. If not right now, then they will be very shortly. So those are tools that I'm creating to just shoot straight. I think if you want to make a business of books and you don't have the time that I talked about having, then printing through Amazon and through KDP, so fulfilling through both, is your best option. They're phenomenal at what they do, and you have to do very little other than upload your book, and your books are available to everyone through bookstores and through Amazon. If you're looking at margin and how to make the most margin, the reality of my numbers on a 32-page full-color children's book is that on Ingram Spark for a hardcover, I have to charge $20.95 and I make 50 cents. When I fulfill on my own, I'm able to charge $15.95 and I make $5.95. So that's the margin. That's the reality of the margin. If I counted for my time, and I tell people this all the time, if I counted for my time, I don't think I'd make a cent. But I love doing it, so I don't mind not accounting for my time in that equation.
Yeah. And then what about, how do you advise people on color versus not? Because I know that's a big one. And that is a big cost savings. If you're saying, hey, I've got, if I go not color, or if I go grayscale or something, like that's going to save me a lot of money. Like, did you ever consider that? And then also, how do you kind of advise your students through that process?
Yeah. So I don't think too many children's authors even get into the realm of considering what it would look like to print in grayscale, just because of the reality of a children's book. However, I am working with some people that are writing chapter books that are including smaller illustrations to lead off chapters or to literally illustrate a point within their chapter book, that are doing it beautifully in grayscale. Not saying it can't be done, just not something that often gets considered to even do it in grayscale. That's a cost that I think as a children's book author, you just accept. And you do raise the price of your book to account for that. Your book is worth a lot of money. It takes a lot of money to produce your book. So it's totally good to charge a fair price.
Yeah. And that's a great distinction between children's picture books and books for children that have pictures in them. Yeah. which is a big difference in kind of probably the preference there as well. I want to back up just a little bit. You talk about novelty press. You went, I know, way down the rabbit trail of figuring out printing options and just left no stone unturned. What is a novelty press? You touched on this a little bit ago, but how like for folks who say, hey, all right, I want to go about this the same way that Elaine did it, and I want to actually find a printer. How do you go about doing that? Is that a national company? Is it a local company? Like, where do you go to look for that? All that good stuff.
Yeah, so there are some that are local, national, and international. They're all valid options. It just depends on what your preferences are. For me, the first thing I did was I said, if I can go local, I'm going to go local. So I called all of the novelty presses. I just Googled novelty presses in Grand Rapids, Michigan. That's where I am. And I called all of them. Due to various factors, it wasn't an option for me. So the next step was to say, okay, how far do I have to go? I was able to go just very little south of the border into Indiana and find a novelty press there that worked really well for me. And to just answer that novelty press in general question, they're just printing presses that are smaller than the direct to bookstore presses. So yeah, I think nice. That's all I would say about that.
Awesome. We're going to kind of go lightning round. But I want to talk back up a little bit. You talked about going through the illustration process. Tips for folks on finding an illustrator and navigating kind of that piece of the process. What are biggest tips and lessons learned?
Yes, I would personally say that networking is king here. The best thing you can possibly do is to speak to somebody that has worked with that illustrator and say, what was your experience like? I personally would not be excited to get to employ an illustrator that I hadn't at least been on the phone with. I want to know, how is our working relationship going to be? What is it? How much communication can I expect from you? How flexible are you? So I went fishing and I found an illustrator very close to home. He actually is one of my very best friends. So I posted on Upwork and I looked for people there. I asked people in the self-publishing school community, hey, who have you used? And I actually ended up hiring my best friend that lives three doors down, super helpful. And it was phenomenal for me because when he, just as an example, when he came back to me with the first round of illustrations, they were pencil sketches, very lightly colored in. It was a little white girl that he had pictured as the main character. Makes sense, right? Like, hello. But I said, actually, now that you did that, I'm so sorry, but it's actually a black boy. Like, that's how it's been in my head. And it was important for me to have the relationship with my illustrator to be able to feel okay about saying, hey, this is actually not the picture that I had in my head. That's why I'm saying, I think networking is king here. You've got to talk to your illustrator before you start working with them. And I would say a verbal conversation is much better than just an email inquiry so that you can get a feel for how that relationship is actually going to play out.
And can you touch on this a little bit? Because you obviously went, I mean, we've got the book production partners list inside the program and people can use that and crowdsource that. But I know a lot of times we're like, hey, don't work with friends or family members because it can be really hard. So like any lessons learned or even just tips? Because I mean, I think you went in with eyes open. So it's like, okay, you know how to properly set expectations, how to vet the person, how to make sure that they're legit, like all those things. But a lot of other people might hear that and say, oh, you can just hire a friend and let's do that. So why or why not do that for anyone who might be listening or going through the program?
Yeah, so this same person cleans my house. He runs a cleaning business, cleans my house, also illustrated my book. I think my book illustrations are phenomenal. So what I learned the first time around when I hired him to do something else was that I needed to have a serious conversation with him upfront about what was most important in our friendship. So when I hired him to do that first job, I said, okay, here's the deal. This is what I need. This is what I would ask for from anybody. This is the amount that I'm going to pay you. This is the way in which I will pay you. And I don't want this to impact any other part of our friendship. So what does this sound like? Does it sound okay to you? We had a verbal conversation about that. We reached an agreement and then we wrote it down and signed it. So nice. That was great. Lesson one. And it worked out really swimmingly. So when I went back to him to say, hey, would you consider, I asked for all the same things that are in a normal illustration contract. I asked for the rights to the images. I asked if he would consider saying yes to the first five books in the series at the same price, if I could help commit to like getting him publicity. And he was happy to do that. So I used our normal contract and I sat down and I had a real conversation with my friend and said, okay, if this doesn't work, I don't want it to impact anything. That's Here's great. How the pay is going to work. Just shoot straight, have a contract.
That's amazing.
Be upfront.
Amazing. Yeah. And I know obviously we have sample contracts and stuff in the program as well. Can you touch on like, how did you vet that he was legit and like these illustrations are going to be good?
Yeah. I asked for sample illustrations. So I said, when that little girl that I talked about that he brought to me at first, that was a sample illustration. And that was kind of the first test of whether or not this was going to work. When I said, actually, it's not a little white girl. It's a little black boy. That is like the primary character in this book. So could we try again? And also I wanted the colors more vibrant. So I said, is it possible to do this digitally instead of on paper? And when he was willing to make those changes and to adjust his style for the way that I saw the book coming to life, I knew that we were going to be fine. When he came back with the second drawings, those ended up being almost the final drawings. So it was pretty clear right off the bat. Oh, this is exactly what was in my head. I'm so thankful we're working together.
That's awesome. That's great. Now I want to fast forward just a little bit and kind of in the home stretch here and talk about marketing. So I think one of the things that you've done an amazing job of is having a very specific hook and topic. And it's something I've shown other people that are doing children's book of like, hey, look at this. Like we always talk about, you instantly understand whether or not what the book's about and whether or not it's for you, which can be really hard to do for a children's book and to kind of, cause it's story based. And so it's like, how do you draw out those themes or like, how do you think about the avatar or the way that you're going to market this or what's the message or all those things. And when you go on your Amazon page. And so it's like from the title to subtitle to cover to then the first sentence of your book description to then it just flows straight in. It's very clear. This is a book about sharing your faith for kids. And mm-hmm. and even more specifically, I think it's a book about sharing your Christian faith for kids, right? Yep. And so it's super specific, and you've done just an amazing job of that. So how did you do it? Why is it important to be specific? And any tips for folks who might say, okay, that's great, Elaine, but my book's not as specific, like how to draw out kind of those specific through lines for their children's book?
Yeah. So for me, it was very clear. I knew right off the bat, I wanted Christian kids to be confident in sharing their faith, even with everything going on in the world today. You can look at it 6 ways from Sunday and get 6 different answers, but I knew that that is what I wanted to do. And I knew that I was capable of doing it. I also knew that if I tried to talk to everybody, I would be talking to nobody. And that wasn't worth it to me. So right off the bat, I think to some extent, I was lucky that I was that, and I am that focused. However, I challenge authors every day. Okay, you can write this as a passion project and talk to everyone. And your editor will edit for a passion project if you ask them to. But if you're talking about books as a business, you have to run it the same way you would run any business, which means that as we're talking, we can't talk to everybody. We have to choose who we're talking to and speak specifically to them. So yeah, for me, it was pretty intuitive, but also I think thinking of them as a business rather than your passion project, if you're willing to do that, you will develop something that can turn into an actual side income.
It's great. And I would challenge everyone to think through this process. I mean, this can be very hard. I know I've talked about through this with Aubrey, and she's got her book, The Wild Boy. And it's adventure. And it's a story about adventure and travel. But really the through lines are adventure and in protecting the environment, like for kids. So it's like, those are the through lines, but it doesn't ever say that in the book. It isn't like,
yes,
kids protect the environment, but that is the focus, and that's the lesson that you draw from the book, right? But just by going through that exercise, she started kind of thinking through, oh, this is the specific lesson or through line, which means this is how I can market it to where it's not just a story for kids, but it's a story for parents that care about the environment, or it's a story for parents, homeschool parents who care about their kids going on adventures and playing outside. It's
good.
Like, thinking the through line through of, okay, who is the parent that is going to buy this book? And the kid, we all say that all the time. It's like a story that parents will buy or be proud to buy and kids will love to read. And so I would just challenge anyone listening or watching, find the through line. It's important from a marketing perspective. I got a bunch more questions, so we're going to get to go rapid fire here. How did you get so many reviews so quickly on your book? And what are your tips for getting reviews for children's books?
Yeah, I pounded pavement, like just straight up pounded pavement. I had a launch team of 140 people. And if you look at my book as of 2 hours ago, I had 41 reviews. I'm still pounding pavement 15 days after launch. I'm contacting 10 people a day and saying, hey, thank you so much for your support of my book. Great. I'm sure you already own a copy, but I noticed you haven't left a review yet. Could you go and do that now? It means a lot to me. And it's working. So those steady reviews rolling in are still helping the book get seen by more eyes, which is awesome.
Launch team, consistent follow-up, one-on-one reach outs and follow-ups. I love that. And I love the 20-mile march approach of just 10 outreaches a day. Now let's backtrack just a little bit. Pre-launch keywords, categories, big deal. And also something that people, I think, way overthink and spend just so much, and they're like terrified to pick the wrong ones. Any tips for picking keywords and categories that'll help sell your book?
Yeah. The first thing I would say is actually alluding to what you were saying about people are so afraid. I was too. I get it. I hear you. Your fear is real. However, it is not validated through the eyes of Amazon, because you can update your keywords and categories anytime. I could change them 6 times a day if I wanted to. It takes a little longer than that to go live, but in all reality, I can change them as often as I want. So for me, I said, okay, what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna go ahead and get into Publisher Rocket, best like search engine on the market for what we're doing. And I'm gonna look for what are the keywords that people are typing in Amazon relevant to kids' Christian books. I picked 7. one of them's not working. I can already see that after 2 weeks. So I went in and looked again and changed that one that I don't think is working. And the same thing with categories. Got into Publisher Rocket, said, okay, what's relevant and what's doable, and chose those. And if I notice that anything's not working, I'll change it. I try to look at my keywords and categories on any book that I publish every 6 months and optimize again.
Yeah, nice. It's great. And follow the process we teach to get in 8 more categories, to get in 10 total. Yep. That's something that not a lot of people know about, or if they do, they miss it in the process. Just real quick, you said you noticed one of your keywords wasn't working. How'd you know that?
Yeah, so I was looking through the list and looking at the people I did not know that had left a review in my reviews. And in those reviews, I noticed that there was some language that was being consistently used that had nothing to do with one of my keywords. I got rid of that keyword and replaced it with something that had more to do with the reviews left by people I did not know.
Nice. Awesome. That's great. So a couple final questions. Obviously, you're coaching a ton of folks through the children's book school now. What are the biggest mistakes? We're going to flip for like 3 minutes and assume we're speaking to folks who are coming into the program and they're listening to or watching this prior to their first coaching call with you, right? I'll backtrack just a little bit and ask a different question. What would you say to those folks? Like, any tips on how to set them up, how to set themselves up for success before their first clarity call with you?
Yeah, I think this process is fun, and I want you to let it be fun. It does not have to be this hugely intimidating thing. Your first book is probably not your last, and it's certainly not the end of the world, no matter what you do or don't do. So this process can and should be fun. There's no reason for you to be super afraid or timid. We can change anything at any given time. The second thing is I need you to be willing to be edited by me, by your editor, by your friends, by kids, especially. I need you to be willing to be edited. It's so important that we write books, like you said, Chandler, that kids actually want to read. And that means that we're willing to flex for the feedback we get from them.
That's great. Be coachable. Follow the process, listen to your coach, log into the course, and watch the videos, and go through the PDFs, the templates, just so many amazingly helpful tools. Last couple questions I have. Biggest mistake you see folks make, or speaking to that student that's coming in the program, or that person that's about to go on this journey, top one or two things that you're like, hey, watch out for this. Don't make this mistake.
Yeah, I think the reality of being willing to be edited is super important if you are not doing this as a legacy. So I'm working with some authors that are doing this as a legacy, and that is beautiful. So they're writing books about insert topic here that's really important to their family, and they want that on paper long-term. Cool, do that. And you don't have to be willing to be edited. But if you want that book to also make money, you have to be willing for that to flex and be edited. That's the saddest thing to watch, is to see somebody insist on legacy and that they will make money, and then watch them be crestfallen when that doesn't work out.
Yeah, that's great. That's fantastic. this has been amazing, Elaine. Just really, really awesome. And just love seeing the continuous improvement in what you're doing in the children's book school, and what you're doing with your books. This is just awesome. So hopefully this has been real helpful for folks who are thinking about turning their nonfiction book into a children's book, or even, obviously we spend a lot of time talking specifically to how to just write and publish a children's book successfully. So guys, if you want to check out more information about Children's Book School, all you have to do, there's two options. So if you're thinking, hey, I'd love to like go through a training that goes more in depth on how to go through the process, go to self-publishingschool.com/kids. It's about a 45-minute training on the process. That's self-publishingschool.com/kids. Really, really helpful. And then, or if you're on the flip side, you're saying, hey, I'm in, this sounds awesome, let's just do this, then book a call with our team. We'll it's a strategy call. We'll chat through this process with you, see if you're a fit for the program. If so, we'll help you get enrolled. The link to do that is self-publishingschool.com/children. So that's self-publishingschool.com/children. You can book a call with the team there, chat, and join the join Children's Book School. Depending on when you join, we're still in a phase of, I don't think we've had quite our new, it's a brand new and improved program, and we haven't quite had our first 100 founding members. We're quickly approaching 100, which is very exciting. So you'll be one of the founding members and fund a library in a third world country through fund a library. The first, that'll forever be part of your legacy, is funding a library as one of the first 100 folks to join this program. So self-publishingschool.com/kids for the training webinar, and then self-publishingschool.com/children to book a call with the team. Elaine, this has been awesome. Where can people go to find out more about you and to buy your books?
Yeah, you can go to Amazon, or my preference would be that you can check out my website. It's approachablefaith.com. I would love to be able to personally mail you your books.
Yeah, awesome. Elaine, thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thanks, Chandler.
Thank you so much for watching or listening to this episode of the Self-Publishing School Podcast. I know there's so many places that you could be spending your time. There's other podcasts that you could be listening to, YouTube channels that you could be watching. So thank you so much. It means the world. Now, I want you to do three things right now if you found this episode helpful. All right. Number one, I don't know if you know this, but we've got a YouTube channel. It's a companion channel to this podcast. All the video versions of the episode are on the YouTube channel. So number one, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Number two, if you're listening to this podcast wherever, whether this is Spotify, Apple Podcasts, number two, I want you to subscribe to this podcast right now so you don't miss a future episode. And then number three, this is probably the most important, leave a review on the podcast. All right, reviews are super important and help this podcast get discovered by other people. So number three, leave a review on the podcast. Thank you so much. I'll see you in the next episode. If you're on the fence about scheduling a publishing consultation call with my team, maybe you're not quite ready for that, I've got some free training that I think will be really helpful for you. All right, all you have to do is go to register to sign up. Go to selfpublishing.com/free training. When you do, you're also going to get a free digital copy of my new book, Published. And on that training, you're going to learn the next step, so how to implement with your book. So how to write, how to publish, how to launch successfully. So go to register right now at selfpublishing.com/free training. I'll see you there.